Today on The Grave Talks, the Haunted Park Hotel, a conversation with Andy Moore. In the 1800s, the railway system linked the Yorkshire towns, enabling the Park Hotel to thrive as a seaside resort destination for mill workers living in nearby areas like West Yorkshire and Bradford. The Park Hotel was in its heyday during this time. Many stars stayed here as a base for performances. According to Andy Moore, it wasn't all fun and games, though. He believes the hotel was home to some very dark and even satanic rituals that may have even resulted in a sacrificial murder. Today, we hear the very haunted story of the Park Hotel.
Well, it's been a busy few months. So let's have a think. There's been a few. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to start with the Park Hotel investigation in Morecambe.
Okay. Tell me some history on the Park Hotel. What's the story on the building?
Okay. Well, it's in Morecambe, which is on the northwest coast. So it's a bit of a journey for me from where I'm based, but it was well worth it. So it's an old hotel. I'd say in a region of just over 100 years old. It was a very exclusive jet set hotel back in its day. Lots of famous clientele went there because it was quite near to one of the major theatres in Morecambe. So they had quite a few stars over the years turn up. It's probably got about 100 plus rooms. I think off the top of my head, I believe it's Grade 2 listed. So it's a listed property.
What does that mean exactly for our listeners in the States?
Yeah, it just means that it's of historic importance, so it can't be knocked down. There's only certain things.
So it'd be like a registered historical location. It'd be kind of like what we would call it.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fascinating. It's a warren of just different rooms. It's in quite a dilapidated state at the moment. The owner is in the process of doing it all up, and they hold regular ghost hunts there and investigations. Mm-hmm. But it's a warren of secret passages and things like that. And the whole vibe of the building is quite strange and quite dark from my point of view. We went there. I got asked by a group of local paranormal investigators called Wensbury Paranormal. Mm-hmm. They asked me to go up. It was a team share event with some other paranormal groups from across the country. And we all kind of worked on different floors and, you know, swapped over when the time was due to swap. But a very, very strange place. In my group, there was myself, and I think there was six others. I actually took my daughter up there as well. She's very sensitive to spirit. Mm-hmm. We had an historian with us as well. And the first section that we went to was on the very top floor. Now, immediately in that area, we were sensing a presence of female energy, very strong. She was setting off equipment straight away. So we had the REM pod going off, and the REM pod was responding to questions that we were asking. You know, are you female? Yes, it'd go off. So all the questions that we were building up, it was answering back. So that was a brilliant start for us. We had the old cat balls going off as well. And then we reverted to, I don't know if you guys work with the Necrophonic app, which is a set of phonics that come through. Mm-hmm. No actual words on there at all. And we were getting the name Park Hotel. The name Eliza came through really strongly. Mm-hmm. I was connecting. I draw the spirit of Eliza, which was, I'd say, turn of the century. I think I got the date of 1910. there were other spirits there as well. There was a soldier. Obviously, I'd gone there blind and I didn't know any of the history at all. Mm-hmm. So, but one of the groups was a historian. He knew the story of the soldier who apparently committed suicide in the building. So we were picking up whether it was residual or spirit. I'm still not 100% sure. But we were getting echoes of that and burns and being treated and all that kind of thing. But what, for me, sorry.
What is the story of the soldier that committed suicide in the building, other than obviously he committed suicide in the building? Is there a backstory with that at all?
No, nobody knows the backstory to this, unfortunately.
Okay.
Nobody knows why he's there. So it's one of those mysteries that we haven't even got a name in historical records. Mm-hmm. So what his story was, I don't know. Like I say, in terms of spirit coming through to communicate with me, there wasn't a lot other than picking up the energy signature of what appeared to be a man in uniform and then feeling as though I got burns over my body, mm-hmm. which then just tied in with what the historian got at the time. So that was a strange vigil. At the same time, which was really strange, for no reason whatsoever, the fire alarm went off, mm-hmm. and we had to evacuate the building. It took us a good 20 minutes for the owner to come out and reset the alarm, but on the panel, there was no reason for that alarm to have gone off. Mm-hmm. We weren't lighting candles or smoking or anything like that. But that alarm went off, which was strange.
Sure.
And to this day, we can't work out why that went off. I'm not saying that it was paranormal. It could have been a technical fault on the system, but we don't know.
Yeah.
I'd also got in the group a chap called John Tolliday. Now, John, he's an occultist. He worked in the 1970s. With satanical worship groups and all that kind of thing. So he knew all his stuff about the darker side of investigating. He's quite open and quite sensitive. And we went up to the highest point of the Park Hotel, which is a 360-degree view of the whole of the area. It sits right on top of the building. It's made of glass, and like I say, you can get a view from a 360-degree angle all the way across the terrain. Up there, it was really strange from what we were getting residually, which was that myself and my daughter could see a pentagram that had been marked out on the floor. Now, this was bare floorboards. There was no visible markings, but I'd got the residual image of a pentagram marked out on there. And as we tuned in more, we then got a lady that was naked and tied to the floor over the pentagram. Now, the weird thing was that I don't usually deal with this kind of stuff, but underneath where she lay was the only way I can describe it, like a brass funnel that runs through the floorboards to the room below. And to get access to the room where we were, there's a ladder. You climb. The room below went absolutely freezing cold, and we got the images of people in cowls, is the only way to describe it, like a hooded version of a monkey, if that makes sense. That's the only way I can describe it. Mm-hmm. And they were stood below on another pentagram on each point of the pentagram, while another woman, strange as this seems, was stood underneath the funnel. Mm-hmm. A man then cut the woman on the side who was laid down upstairs, and the blood dripped down onto the woman below. For me, this was pretty horrific. I got my daughter there. I was like, I don't want to see this. This is not good. The other psychic in the group was also getting this kind of thing, but not so much in detail. They're getting fragments of it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it was some sort of weird, bizarre ritual that I'd never come across. So I spoke to John, and John, I told him what I was describing, and John was like, you shouldn't know about this kind of thing. You shouldn't know about this kind of ritual. And I was like, oh no, this is taking the turn for the worst. Everybody started to feel sick. Everybody was feeling really anxious. And then the weird thing was that the woman that was laying on the floor, I got a clear glimpse of a face, only for a few seconds. And it was the same lady that had been talking to us in the corridor earlier on via REM pod. So she wasn't killed in the ritual, but obviously she was injured.
Yeah.
The ritual then finished, and then we moved on to the next room, which was the library. Now, within the library, this lady come through again, and she was absolutely screaming for help. And as we connected more and more, we were using every single device that we got. I was drawing pictures. I got that she'd been involved in this kind of like sacrifice, but then she'd actually been murdered by strangulation after the sacrifice, if that makes sense. And her spirit was trapped within that building. And the weird thing was that, it sounds so weird to say, do you remember in Ghostbusters, the first film, and the whole building was designed for a ritual purpose?
Yes.
Yeah. This Park Hotel had the same sort of vibe going on, as though different elements were made for this ritual purpose, because there were so many secret corridors. Mm-hmm. You would never know there. You'd push a wall and the door would open and that kind of thing. Anyway, this woman was asking for help. So I decided that she needed some help. We needed to cross her over. Got the confirmation of her that she wanted to go, but there was somebody stopping her from leaving. And this was obviously another spirit. And that spirit was presenting itself in a black cowl. And I can only presume that this spirit was the person that murdered her by strangulation. So I called my guides in to help. But before I knew it, the whole room was like swirling with black. From what I could see, the temperature was dropping, people were feeling uncomfortable. There was a door that was shut just in the other side of the library, fully shut with a twist handle to actually open it. Mm-hmm. There was a guy standing there with a cowl. Anyway, I managed to cross the spirit over. My daughter was feeling sick. I had to get her out of the room. When I walked back in the room, this guy was still standing there threatening me and everything. And then the door just opened by itself. I saw him open it, and then it slammed shut. And obviously, it kind of freaked everyone out, but that's what we were there for, to see, have that kind of experience. Obviously, we checked for drafts and everything else like that. But the thing for me is it's a turn handle. It's on the latch. You can't, you know, no breeze is going to blow it because the latch is on. So it's physically turned, opened, then slammed. After that experience, I was kind of like physically drained. So I got a 3-hour drive back. I said, that's it, I'm done for tonight. I've obviously done what I needed to come here and do. But they had some horrendous experiences throughout the rest of the night. And whether it was spirits being angry that she'd gone, I don't know. It's one of those places I wouldn't rush back to. But, it, you know, if anybody wants to go get a really good investigation, go. It's fantastic. But I wouldn't go back.
And I want to hear more about what some of the other horrendous experiences were, but I want to ask a couple questions about what we just talked about there. First of all, kind of tracing way back to this decrepit hotel, it's no longer a hotel, and in falling in disrepair. Do we know when, how, why it closed?
Like I say, I'm not too sure in the history. I don't do my research beforehand, mm-hmm. and I don't really follow anything up afterwards. Mm-hmm. I want to try and keep my experience as pure as I can.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I don't know why it closed. I would only presume it was either to do with the war, as the Second World War come into play, or the First World War, mm-hmm. or due to a financial crisis. I'm not 100% sure.
Sure.
When it opened, when it closed once again. But there is the website for the building. So, you know, if listeners want to jump on there and have a look, that'll should provide all the history that they...
What is the name of the building again?
Yeah, it's the Park Hotel in Morecambe. And that's, like I say, that's up on the northwest coast.
Okay. I'm sure there's plenty of people are going to be like, I want to Google this. No, they can. Now, when we're talking about the ritual, when you saw that through your abilities, you're seeing this woman there, her being scarred. This is something. Are you looking at something that had at one time physically occurred in that building? Is that what you believe you were seeing?
Yeah, that's what I believe I was seeing. Yep. My daughter was also seeing the same thing. You know, my daughter's 21, and as a dad, I'm always going to be protective, and I always try and help her out with a mediumship and psychic ability.
Sure.
She was getting pretty freaked out because it's not a normal thing to see.
Yeah.
The other sensitives in the group were seeing, like I say, fragments of it, and they were feeling, you know, but it's not so much seeing what you see, but it's the feelings that linger afterwards.
Yeah.
Because on a day-to-day basis, we don't deal with sacrifice and all that kind of dark energy.
Yeah.
And we felt as though that we jumped back in the car and drove home, and we didn't feel right for a couple of days after, as that kind of residual energy still stayed with us. It did knock most of the group about. So regardless of what we saw, the actual feelings that we got, that as a group of six people, mm-hmm. to all get the same sort of feeling and darkness, and for it to stay with people.
Let me ask you this, and it goes back to kind of the human side and not necessarily the ghostly side, but when one is actually performing a ritual like this, I know you haven't, but I kind of go to why, like at the end of the day, someone who believes they're performing some sort of sacrifice, and let's say they do it and they walk away and then they go back to kind of, you know, everyday life, because I don't know that someone is always, you know, wearing a hood and performing sacrifice 24/7. One would have to imagine, you know, the rest of the time they're kind of living their life among us and you don't really know who they are. What does that give that person someone who does these sort of things? Is there some sort of power that's gained truly, or is it just a, what is that for individuals who get involved in things like that? What are they getting out of it?
Well, obviously I can't speak from a personal experience.
Sure.
But from what I can gather from that kind of scenario, John did tell me that it was a ritual that was practiced not very often. It's a very strange ritual. And it was to summon one of the darker energies through. He wouldn't give him a name. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was because he'd still got contacts within that community and he didn't want all that kind of knowledge becoming public and all that. And to be honest, I didn't want to know either. I was like, sure. No, keep it to yourself.
So you summon the darker energy and then yeah. What? Then you use that against your enemies, people you don't like? Is it kind of giving you a one-up on things and you're using this dark for your advantage?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
From the people that I've known that have dealt with this kind of darkness and gone into these practices,
yeah,
it does give them a lot of the things that they want out of life: status, popularity,
okay,
power, wealth, all that kind of stuff. But when you do that kind of thing, there's always a sacrifice on your part as well, isn't there? You give something a way of yourself, a little piece of your soul that I believe happens to get what you want. And for me, I could, it's not my thing. It's not my place to judge either, but it's, you know, that's what they get out of it. I knew people that, you know, when they were practicing this kind of thing, had multiple houses, beautiful cars, loads of money. And as soon as they turned the back, they lost a lot.
How often do you think that this stuff is going on around us with people that we just, we're completely unaware because we don't see it? I mean, is this something that you believe is you know, prevalent in you know, celebrity type circles? Is it something that's going on within governments, within higher up people? Is it, you know, how widespread do you think this is, and most of society is completely unaware?
I think it's quite prevalent. Yeah. You know, you working in the community that we kind of work in, you do hear bits and pieces and stories, and you do meet people that have had an interest or been drawn in it or been working in it. I won't give any details, but I do know quite close to where I live, there is a stately home, massive mansion. It's open to the public daily. But my friend, he went there in the 1970s to practice all kinds of satanic rituals there, and the family were involved too. What? So as an example, you can see.
Yeah.
Now you can go there during the day and have a good look around, and it's a beautiful building, fantastic place. And he told me that there is a room that the public aren't allowed to go in, but if you go in there, it's all ornately decorated and all that kind of stuff for rituals and that kind of thing. So it's and he did say that there were politicians there, there were doctors, there were law enforcement officials, there was all kinds of people from every single walk of life that were involved in it.
I guess, I mean, I wonder about these things because, I mean, how does one fall into this where, you know, you get some money, some status or power? I mean, how do you get invited into something like this? How do you find yourself going, I'm living my life, it's going kind of good, I'm making some money. Oh, yeah, my friend Bill, he wants to invite me over to the satanic ritual tonight. You know, it's like, it's not exactly like something that would come up in conversation, you know, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, that sounds like fun. Let's go try that out. I mean, it almost seems like there needs to be some sort of grooming or something involved to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to go do that. I believe these things go on. I guess I'm kind of like fascinated with almost like cults too. Like, how does one get so indoctrinated into this that they make it part of their life, and that it's like, yeah, okay, they're a doctor one day, they're a politician, and everybody sees them as being fairly normal, but they're doing this shit at night.
Yeah, it's I have no idea. My friends never told me how he got involved, and he wouldn't divulge that, and he wouldn't tell me
sure
where the locations are. Nowadays, he says that I know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to tell you where they are. And I was like, good, I don't want to know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this stuff goes on right underneath our noses, but we're unaware of it. And I think a lot of it's because we don't consider like, oh yeah, I'm going to find this or that's out there. It's so bizarre. I mean, once someone does go down that road, and they're part of it and they've been practicing it, and let's say someone decides, you know what, not for me, I'm gonna go collect Legos now and stop with the Satanism, then I'm just gonna move my hobby over to something more I guess benign. Is anyone truly able to ever leave that world when they've kind of given so much of themselves to it? Are they then going to be plagued for the rest of their lives because of the choices that they made and what they gave up for that period of time for the wealth or the power or whatever?
It's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. My friend, he's left. He's been out of it, but he keeps being called back. I know that he keeps being called back, and I suppose it's material temptation that they put in your way, saying, you know, before you know, the contacts that are there, you know, you'll have so much money in your back pocket. We can get you a discount on this house. We can, you know, talk to somebody who owns a car garage and we'll get you a nice car.
Yeah.
It's their part group and all. It's that temptation that gets put in the way. And a lot of people are materialistic, aren't they? And they want those nice things. And, you know, they're willing to sacrifice, you know, I'll give up my Tuesday night. So I'll pop down the local Coven and sacrifice a chicken or whatever. And, that, you know, I'm driving around in the Bentley.
You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, if Satanism really wanted to recruit people, they could just flat out say it. It's like, guess what? When you join, you're going to get discounts at all sorts of local merchants and great cars and this, you get all this stuff. All you have to do is sacrifice a chicken and say hail Satan every Tuesday night. It could be like a Jenny Craig thing, you know, where you show up to lose weight, but you're showing up to worship Satan. And then it's like, and someone says, why did you join Satanism? I joined it for the discounts. I joined Satanism just to get the discounts over at the IKEA. Since then, 50% off everything. Satan's totally worth it. You know, I joke the same way too about, I have many family members who, you know, have served in the military and such. And I always, you know, in my dry sense of humor is like, you know, some people ask, you know, what made you decide to serve or, you know, what this or that. If I had done it, which I did not, it was not for me. But if I had, with my sense of humor, if somebody would ask me that, my response would be for the discounts. You know, you get 15% off at McDonald's, or you know, it'd be the most absurd reason for doing something. Such extreme as you know, dedicating years of your life to that, or dedicating yourself to something like this as well. But yeah, that's amazing. I guess if you start to see, the results, I mean, I guess maybe that's what convinces you. Because again, I'm so logical on things. I would really have to see, oh, look, you got all this because of Satanism? Okay, let's sign up. You know, it's just the suggestion. It's almost like a pyramid scheme without it. It's like, oh, yeah. Amway? Like, and then if you recruit four more people, you'll get those commissions too. It's bizarre.
It's an easy selling it. You know,
I mean,
get a free push.
Yeah. You get like a one car wash a month and yeah, you get a little coupon book, the Church of Satan, and it has like the pentagram in this on the side and then all the local businesses that are supporting it. You said that more things happened throughout the night, even after you left. What did you hear about that happened?
In the cellar. The cellar's not a cellar. It's actually an old kitchen area. So, but they put a cat ball on the table. Nobody was near the table, and the cat ball went flying off the table to a set of questions they were asking that was related to what we'd done up in the library, and it was as though somebody was angry. One of the strange things then in that kitchen, and I've got no idea, and nobody knew why, but there's two prison cells down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which, why would you have prison cells in a downstairs basement? I'm talking, you know, not the iron doors, but the iron bar type prison cells.
Yeah.
You know, why were they there? What has that got to do with? Is it part of the cult that was there? Would you put your sacrificial victims in the cell before they were brought up? I don't know. Or was it just to protect all the expensive champagne? I haven't got a clue. But there's two cells down there which were weird. But I think the overall feeling from the night was just the darkness there. You know, there wasn't anything that would appear to be light. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd expect in a hotel with thousands of people walking through the door over a year, potentially hundreds of thousands over the lifetime of the hotel, there would have been good things that happened there, you know?
Yeah.
Dances, and there was a ballroom there and all that kind of thing. So you would have got some good energy that come through. You know, people went there on holiday to have a good time. I suppose people went there for the honeymoon and whatever else. But none of that energy seems to come through the fabric of the building. None of it kind of seeped into me that would say there was joy here. Once it felt joyless is the only way I could describe it. So I found that strange. I mean, even when I investigate prisons, with all the darkness that's involved with a prison, you still find a laughter and joy as people cope with the situation. It still seeps through the atmosphere. But there, joyless would be the word that I would use with it.
It's like the negativity far outweighed the positivity in a location like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you, because I'm trying to find it as I sit here, and there's a lot of park hotels. Can you spell for me the city that it's in? Because I missed that part.
It's M-O-C.
Mm-hmm.
No, M-O-R-C-O-M-B-E.
Okay, cool. That'll be easier for not only me to find, but then the rest of the audience as well. Because I really want to take a look at this place. Tell me more about some of the, is there any other experiences that others had while there? Cause I'm looking at this right now. It looks like, are they now open again? It looks like you can actually stay at this place.
I mean, I only went back in, I think it was April. I went, nobody was staying there then. Like I say, it's in the process of being renovated and done up slowly. So I don't think there's anybody staying there. There were some, I think people were living there prior to my investigation in terms that they kind of like turned certain rooms into like flats.
Mm-hmm.
But people had left and they were converting the rooms and everything.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation in part two, What Spirits Haunt the Falcon Hotel. We're going to dive into another hotel in the UK. How did the physical appearances of fellow investigators change while on the investigation? And what kind of message of suffering did a specific spirit try to communicate to the living at the Falcon? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up to be one at thegravetalks.com or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For $5 a month, you get access to all of our bonus material, advanced episodes, and more. Patreon.com/thegravetalks or search The Grave Talks in the Patreon app to get access to that and all of our interviews, all of it commercial free as well. You can start binging away right now and get advanced episodes as well. Again, thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.